The following may contain offensive language, adult humor, and or content that some viewers may find offensive. The views and opinions expressed by any one speaker does not explicitly or necessarily reflect or represent those of Mark Rattledge or W2M Network. Please listen with caution, or don't listen at all.
There'll be spectacle, there'll be fantasy, there'll be derring do and stuff like you would never see.
Hey, a movie!
Yeah, we're gonna be a movie!
Starring everybody
and me! There'll be heroes bold, there'll be comedy, and a lot of fuss that ends for us real happily.
Hey, a movie!
We can watch it all develop!
Starring everybody
and me! We'll take the world! And set it on its ear.
Come on, join in. We're going to start right here.
And we are going to start right here. Hello and welcome to Triple Feature, a Rattledge and Broadcasting premiere podcast. I'm your host, the mandated reporter and frankly unmortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And we are kicking off Black History Month here on the Rattledge and Broadcasting Network. And I am transracial. I identify as a 6'5" black guy. It's true. And my brother from another mother, to help celebrate Black History Month again, second year in a row, he's here with me to do all the Black History Month shows. Doughboy himself from the mean streets of West Virginia, y'all. It's Jason Beasley. How do you do, sir?
I'm hung like a 6'5" black guy. I'm white, but I'm hung like a 6'5" black guy.
That's fantastic. I'm thrilled to hear that. Jason, we did a whole bunch of Black History Month shows last year. We did the Modern Shaft movies with Samuel Jackson as A Long Road to Ruin. We did a survey over two shows. We did a survey of both classic and modern blaxploitation, where we looked at Coffee, the first Pam Grier movie. We looked at Superfly, which was made famous by the Curtis Mayfield soundtrack. And
what was the third one?
The third one was
Blackula. How could I forget Blackula? Right.
And then, of course, we did modern blaxploitation, which was mostly picked by you. Pootie Tang. Yes, sir.
Yes.
Pootie Tang.
What a say.
Syndicate and a runny kind. Ladies Man, which you convinced me to do, and I was very happy about that. And then Soul Plane.
And Soul Plane was the worst one out of all of those.
Right.
And it's still a good movie.
Someone left my dog outside. Give me 1 second. But right. Hey, to talk about the triple feature we did of Spike Lee joints.
So also we did the Spike Lee, where we looked at, you know, the prominent history that Spike Lee contributed to the film. We did Malcolm X, Do the Right Thing, and trying to think of the last one. Old Boy. Old Boy, which Mark still has yet to forgive me for.
I don't know what I hated worse about that. The fact that we had an entire Black History Month show of Spike Lee movies and we didn't do Bamboozled. Or the fact that you made me watch Old Boy in the first place.
Well, we got to do diversity. So, you know, Spike Lee had some hits and some misses. We couldn't do all hits. We had to show that, you know, and that was one of his most recent, the show like his decline of film.
Yeah. Well, so it's 2023. We have a new year, new Black History Month, and this is the first of three shows that we're doing. We're doing this one, we're doing an ode to Eddie Murphy, and then we're doing an ode just to Pam Grier herself. So that'll be fun. We've got three shows to do, three triple features. I'm excited about it. Let's get into this one. Jason, you and I are about the same age.
Mark.
Jason, hear me. We're about the same age-ish, you know, within a few years of each other. I think you, me, Jesse, Ronnie are all fairly contemporary. We're born between 76 and 1980, yeah?
Yeah, I was 78.
Okay, Okay, so you're 2 years younger than I am. So we all kind of grew up around the same time. We all grew up as that wave crested of the entire gangster rap culture, both on TV, in the movies, and obviously in music. So the 80s, you have this brimming gangster rap culture with Ice-T, the original gangsta, N.W.A., which then the guys in N.W.A. would go on to do phenomenal solo careers. You have Ice Cube and Dr. Dre, and Dr. Dre beget Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre beget later on in years Eminem. The world of culture and entertainment changed significantly in the 90s with the advent of the gangster rap culture. And so tonight we are looking at three quintessential pivotal movies from that era. We're looking at Boys in the Hood, which is just a legacy picture from John Singleton, directed and written by John Singleton, starring Cuba Gooding Jr. and Morris Chestnut and the aforementioned Ice Cube. And that came out in 1991. We're looking at Menace to Society, which only came out 2 years later, but everyone kind of feels it's like it's directed by the Hughes brothers. And a lot of people started Menace to Society as kind of like, if Boys in the Hood was like softcore porn, Menace to Society was like softcore gonzo porn. It was like the harder, harsher version of Boys in the Hood. Same fucking story, same basic premise. Just like, hey, did you like Boys in the Hood? What if it was worse?
What if it was more intense and more batshit crazy?
Right. And, you know, growing up in the 80s, you remember, like, the breakdance movies.
You know, Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Right, Breakin' 2, Crush Groove. So there were a lot of movies in the 80s that were reflective of urban culture at that time, and reflective of, like, the rap and DJ culture. And it was, and Juice is, like, one of those movies, like, okay, so you know how gangster movies are really popular right now? So what if Crush Groove, but also Boys in the Hood, Juice.
What if we took Breakin' 2, made it a DJ, and killed people?
Yes.
Juice.
Juice. Now you got the juice now, Jason Teasley. So that was directed by Ernest R. Dickerson, and it starred Omar Epps, Jermaine Hopkins, Khalil Kane, and rap sensation of the time, Tupac Shakur. Not a bad actor in any way, shape, or form. Like, in many ways,
and he looked 30.
Kind of, yeah. He really, like, yeah, they're supposed to be teenagers in that movie, like the kids from 90210. Like, Tupac Shakur looked like Gabriel Carteris.
Tupac in the first scene when he walks in to see his dad, I'm like, okay, who's the dad? is Tupac coming in? Because he looks like 5 years younger than his dad.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into, well, first, you know, 1991, 92, 93, I'm in high school. I'm somewhere between freshman and 11th grade, depending on what year we're talking about. I went to school. My freshman year was 1991. I graduated in 1994. So I feel like I saw all of these contemporaneously. I might not have seen them in the theater, but I definitely rented the VHSs because that was a thing back then.
Blockbuster Friday night.
Goddamn right. I, you know, Be Kind, Rewind. I rented the VHS tapes, you know, and watched them with my friends. And growing up, as you know, a small black child in the south side of Chicago, otherwise known as Uniondale, New York, you know, I was very much entrenched up until I moved, and then I retained some of it in the black culture. So I listened to rap music like as early as it's funny. My tape cassette case was like half like Disney and children's stuff and half like Run DMC, the Fat Boys, EPMD, Curtis Blow, what's his name from the Boogie Down Productions. Now, Body Count comes much later, but also Ice-T. I had some Ice-T in there.
Yeah, I was thinking more Fab Five Freddy.
Yeah, Too Short, because you know Jason Teasley, life is Too Short.
Dude, I grew I grew up on Children's Tales.
Yeah.
So that tells you, like, Children's Tales, you know, Life Is, you know, Too Short was probably one of my favorite rappers growing up, honestly. The Ghetto.
The Ghetto Boys.
Yeah, Ghetto Boys. Trying to think who else was a, you know, old school Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Oh my God. That, you know, yeah, like everyone knows Sir Mix-a-Lot because of Baby Got Back, but I had fucking Swats back in the day. In fact, yeah, Jesse Starcher and I did a Metal Hammer of Doom extra on the Metal Church fucking mashup with Sir Mix-a-Lot of Iron Man.
I'll even go even deeper than that. I know the song Buttermilk Biscuits, word yes! for word.
But dude, I used to know that one too. I have been fond of just yelling that out repeatedly at people. Just yeah, Buttermilk Biscuits, y'all, and like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah,
a lot, yo.
Yeah, so because my brother was 7 years older than me, so okay. And when he was in the military, you know, that's when big stereo systems started coming in.
Sure.
And he had, you know, he put a system in his truck. Mm-hmm. You know, when he would come in for visits from off base, you know, he wanted, that was back when me and him had a worthy relationship together. You know, we would actually spend time together. We would go out and do stuff together. So while he was in the Army getting exposed to these different rappers and everything and cultures, I was picking up on it. That's how, like I said, that's when I first heard of Too Short, Sir Mix-a-Lot.
KRS-One. I said Boogie Down Productions before, but I was trying to, like, who was in that? Oh, and who could forget Public Enemy?
Tribe Called Quest.
Oh, my God. So Public Enemy, like, even
911's a joke.
Even as a little kid, like, I was still political. Like, I still had, like, that tinge to me because Public Enemy was, like, my favorite group at the time. I'm in elementary school, and I'm, like, you know, fucking just running out. Yo, my Uzi weighs a ton. You're fucking 7. Shut up. You don't have an Uzi. But, yeah, I was a bit, like, not fear of a Black Planet. It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. I had a big door-sized poster of that in my room because Cousin Ray, who worked at the record store, got me swag. And I had a big-ass poster of It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Me Back. So growing up like that, listening to that music, when these movies start to come out, I'm right there. I'm watching those movies contemporaneously. What about you? When did you see any of these three movies?
Juice and Menace to Society today.
You've never seen them before, really?
No, I had thought I had, but I realized I had not seen them uphill till I watched them today.
Oh my God. Did you, boys, when people would just yell at you randomly, yo, I'll suck your dick, did you think they were just coming on to you? Or did you know that that was from Menace to Society?
I was kind of handsome when I was young.
Well, that's what happens when you send dick pics out. That's gonna make an offer.
You know, you send enough of them out, you're gonna get at least one or two offers.
At least one crackhead's gonna run up to you with a bag of cheeseburgers going, hey, I'll suck your dick.
No, I knew where it originated from because this is something me and you talk about, and this has to be on the docket for next year is the don't be a menace to society while drinking your juice in the hood.
Sorry.
Simply because we could tie everything back into Message. I thought, like, I was like, yeah, I've for sure have watched these, but sitting down today and I'm like, I have never seen these. And I just realized,
wow.
Boys in the Hood, I have seen numerous times. As soon as it hit video store shelves, I was all over it because, like I said, I was entrenched in that culture because of my brother and stuff. But I was kind of, when Boys in the Hood came out, I was kind of finding my own in those early teenage years.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of trying to find my identity. So with the music I was listening to, this was right up my alley because of Ice Cube, simply because it had Ice Cube in it, because I listened to a lot of NWA. And I do mean a lot of NWA.
Yeah.
So, you know, Ice Cube's in a movie. Okay, I want to see it. And then just, you know, like we talked about, the cultural impact that Boys in the Hood had on the film genre as a whole is prevalent even in 2023.
Absolutely. These, I think to one degree or another, every single one of these movies is still impacting film today. I know, like, because of these three movies, there is a lot of look and sound alikes that would come out after. I mean, the entire, like, genre was created out of these three movies to one degree or another. So, just some housekeeping items here. Boys in the Hood is a 1991 American coming-of-age drama film written and directed by John Singleton in his feature directorial debut. So John Singleton is one of, like, the voices in Black cinema. You might know, looking at his filmography, Boys in the Hood, where he was actually nominated for an Academy Award for Best Director and Best Original Screenplay. He followed up with Poetic Justice, Higher Learning. Have you seen Higher Learning?
Higher Learning is great.
Oh my God. I just wanted to be an engineer. My friend Chuck and I, yo, Chuck, where are you? Dude, we would quote fucking lines from Higher Learning at each other all day. It's like, what are you doing there? Plotting? Yeah, we plotting to steal. Steal what? Steal the knowledge. Like, some of the goofiest fucking lines, but we love that.
Yeah. Shit.
Dude, Higher Learning is the best. anyway, Rosewood, Shaft, which we talked about, Baby Boy, which I know people love that movie. I'm not a fan. He directed Too Fast, Too Furious, Four Brothers, and then finally in 2011, he did Abduction. He was a producer on Hustle and the Flow, which if you've never seen it, is phenomenal. Black Snake Moan is in, like, my top 20 movies of all time.
Which we'll be covering.
Which he was a producer. We are? When are we talking Black Snake Moan?
Is it not? Yeah.
Not this year.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's this year.
No, sir.
Because you wanted to put it on the calendar.
I'm guaranteed that may have been before I was social. I'm telling you, here's all we're doing for Black History Month. The one for Pam Grier, and then the one for Eddie Murphy.
Okay, it was Black. Yeah, because we were supposed to do like Four Brothers this year, but you got social. I think it was Black Snake Moan, Four Brothers, and another one we cut this year.
Well, we'll have to do them next year. We'll talk about it next year. Anyway, John Singleton was a producer on those. And like I said, Black Snake Moan and Hustle and Flow are phenomenal movies. And then he's had some acting roles. So John Singleton, definitely one of the premier voices in Black cinema. I just kind of want to read these. As far as Boys in the Hood, so Boys in the Hood, by the way, stars Cuba Gooding Jr., Angela Bassett, Lawrence Fishburne, Ice Cube, Morris Chestnut, like Nia Long. John Singleton's the mailman in this. Regina King would go on to, you know, do some pretty phenomenal things, but here she's like a little kid almost. All right, so reception legacy has a 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. And an 8.4 out of 10. Well acted and thematically rich, Boys in the Hood observes urban America with far more depth in comparison than many of its like-minded films its success inspired, which we will talk about. Boys in the Hood kickstarted the acting careers of Cuba Gooding Jr., Morris Chestnut, and Long, who were relatively unknown before it. It also launched Ice Cube's career as a Hollywood actor and was Angela Bassett and Regina King's first significant film roles. It has been nominated for a bunch of different awards. I'm not going to read them all. I read you the Oscar ones. It won for Best New Filmmaker, an MTV award. It won an NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Motion Picture. Guess what, Jason? It's been inducted into the National Film Registry.
This one I could understand because of the impact that it had on not only urban culture, Black film history, but I mean, just this brought to light a world that suburbia had never seen, I guess you could say. And that's like, you know, Compton, South Central LA,
Crenshaw,
you know, that strife, you know,
you would hear Ice Cube talk about it, like Fort Crenshaw and all of that, you know, obviously with NWA, you would hear straight out of Compton. Places that sound like, you know, alien planets by, you know, most white people standards, but these are very real places. one of the things that I think both Boys in the Hood and Men of Society deal with is like life after the riots of, I think, like the 60s and 70s. And the touches on it, but doesn't deal with it directly, like the crack epidemic, in the sense of like, you know, Lawrence Fishburne talks about this with Boys in the Hood. Like, where do you think the crack comes from? We don't have cocaine plant. We don't have coca plants.
We don't have planes. We don't have ships.
Right. So where's it coming from? We're not growing the coca here. Where's the farms? So how's it getting here? We don't have planes. We don't have boats.
Going on in that, he says, you know, and it kind of looking at it as an adult, I kind of understand it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. He says, what do you see on every? He said, you see a gun shop on every corner,
right?
A liquor store.
Just something. Right
beside, and it's like
this is something Ice-T talked about too.
Why is it? Because you know it's a poverty stricken area. You're going to.
But his premise is like, the man wants us to kill ourselves, and he talks about like gentrification. All right, let's get into the actual movie because like, this stuff's going to come back up again. So, Boys in the Hood, the whole, I'm not going to read the, I was telling Jason before the show started tonight, like if I read the plot synopsis, it just stops the show dead. So, all you need to know about Boys in the Hood, it's almost like a day in the life of these people that live in this part of Los Angeles. Cuba Gooding Jr. Is shown as a little kid. He's having difficulties. He's being raised by a single mom, and out of frustration and a need to have him grow up around a good, strong male role model, of which there's not a lot of in this area. She tends him to go live with his father, who was Lawrence Fishburne, who is ex-military and is now doing real estate and is one of the, you know, thinkers of the community. But, you know, he's there to instill manliness in Cuba Gooding Jr. We fast forward. He's a teenager. I think he's like a senior in high school. He has friends in the neighborhood who are Ice Cube, who's called Doughboy, and then Ice Cube's brother, who is a premier football athlete, and you're just sort of following them through their life. You know, what's it like for them to be in high school? At one point, it's intimated that Ice Cube's character Doughboy has gone to jail or prison and come back.
Because for robbery,
right? When we pick up with them again, after fast forwarding from childhood to teenagers, he's just coming home from prison, presumably.
Yeah.
And so we get to see Cuba Gooding, we get to see how they talk to each other. We get to see how they interact with women. There's a lot of, you know, referring to women as bitches. And then the girls are like, why do you call us that? And because that's what you are and that sort of thing. There's a lot of sexualization going on, but also, I mean, and there's no way to dance around this. The movie deals with the violence of that neighborhood. You have situations where a couple of different scenes of like drive-by shootings and, you know, warring factions of people just getting into it with each other. This all leads to Morris Chestnut's character being gunned down and Cuba Gooding Jr. and Ice Cube deciding that this will not stand and they're going to avenge him. And eventually Cuba Gooding Jr. is made to come to his senses, which doesn't stop Ice Cube's character from getting killed, which we find out in the after credits. But Cuba Gooding Jr. eventually pulls his head out of his ass and he goes off to college. Doughboy gets killed, just like his brother. And that's really it. That's the movie in a nutshell. But what's great about it is, and I'll stop to let you chime in on this, is that this is one of those movies where not a lot happens, but a lot is shown. This is a almost 2 hour movie. It's 112 minutes. And that's what I'm saying. Like, a lot happens in the movie, but there's not like a real strong plot line. You're just kind of following these characters and stuff happens to them and they're reacting. And like the tension of the movie is Cuba Gooding Jr.'s character going to do the right thing or is he going to do the wrong thing? How is this going to go for him?
I feel like this is do the right thing premise on steroids.
Yeah.
Because you have that kind of third person voyeur of a light looking in on life. You get to see the real gang violence between the Bloods and the Crips, because as we find out toward the beginning, you know, when Ice Cube was in the pen, he was, you know, got in with the Crips, came out, is on the streets representing Crips. There's a scene, early on in the adulthood part, where there's kind of a beef up with the Bloods and the Crips at a spot that everybody is cruising right, around and everything. Racing. Yeah. And you see the tensions there, and you see how quick things escalate just right. because they're two gangs. They're right. two African-American gangs.
I think somebody bumped into Morris Chestnut, and it all went downhill from there.
Yeah, and you see guns getting you see Ice Cube pull a gun. You see a Uzi getting shot there. You see everybody scattered. You know, this is real life. This is what, and like I said, it's brought urban life to suburban America. Yeah. And people, we don't really realize that this is going on. We don't realize that there's neighborhoods that right. is like this. We don't realize that this is really the violence that's going on in these neighborhoods. And it makes you take a step back to look and say, you know, how good that you could have it versus, you know, this society. What, and it goes back to the nurture versus nature mm-hmm. thing, because, you know, a lot of inner city African-American kids, they grow up, and we get into this a little bit more in Menace to Society, they grow up seeing a lifestyle that right. they kind of mirror.
Generational trauma based on, you know, the violence and generational drug use and dealing that goes on in the community.
Right.
But I actually think that's one of the, if I have to criticize the movie over anything, I don't think there's so much focus on the violence. And if in like the last title card you see is like Increase the Peace, like the more John Singleton's vision with this movie is to be like, hey, black people shouldn't shoot each other dead. I'm making this movie sort of to protest, to sort of shine light on black on black violence. Here's the problem. And I think Menace to Society actually does a little bit better of a job than this, even though it's not as good of a movie, is it doesn't, you never really see much drug dealing going on in Boys in the Hood. It's almost all wrapped up in violence, but the violence
stems from the drug dealing.
Yeah. Like what? So here's the thing. You see like Cube out on the porch or out on the corner with Chris and, you know, the other, his other ne'er-do-wells. You know, the guy in the wheelchair, Chris yeah. with the pacifier and all that, all his boys just out on the front porch or out on the corner. You're outside because you're dealing drugs.
Right.
You know,
you're waiting for someone to pull up.
Right. And you never really see that. And it's funny because I remember, I want to say it was like Ice-T who did like a documentary on like Crips and Bloods. And, you know, and it was one of these deals where he was respected enough that he could go in with a camera and they let him in. People were willing to tell their stories. And they were like, what exactly are you fighting about? And this actually might have also, the father from Menace to Society, whose name now escapes me. He was in Rock. Charles S. Dutton.
Yeah. Yes.
I think Charles S. Dutton, very similar thing, if not the same documentary, and that might be who I'm thinking of, was like, what exactly are you all fighting over? What's the beef? And they were like, oh, it's territory. We claim this territory for the Bloods. We claim this territory for the Crips, and we're fighting to defend our territory. Like it's a war. Like it's a legit war. And Charles S. Dutton's like, this is all government property. None of this belongs to you. You are literally fighting over something that does not belong to you. But where does that start? It starts with, and I hate to beat this particular dead horse, but it starts with like what The Wire talks about, corners. Why are the corners valuable? Because that's where the foot traffic is. Why is the foot traffic possible? Because that's where you're going to deal drugs. The territory means nothing without the drugs, the cell.
Right.
I can make that inference. You can make that inference. But we're also now drawing on context from other pieces of media. The Wire, I just mentioned. But other movies that deal more directly with systemic drug use and drug dealing. And the movie doesn't speak to that. As if the violence sort of just erupts out of nowhere for no good reason. Like, it all comes from drugs. If you take the drug... There's actually a line in The Wire, like... If you take the drugs away, the violence drops. That was the whole point of season yeah. 3 of The Wire. And I don't feel like, and I'll let you speak on this and then we can start to move on. I think as great as Boys in the Hood is, as monumental in terms of the overall legacy of film, it definitely has its place. It's just, that's kind of like the one failing of it, is that you just, you're sort of just made to believe that, like, the, you know, Compton is just this really violent place for no, you know, it was like the riots, and it just never left. Like, no. They're fighting each other. They're forming gangs. This is all happening because they're all carving up this area to sell drugs to each other. That's it. And the movie doesn't ever really speak to that.
Yeah, but I think, and this is just, you know, this is basically Monday morning quarterbacking, you know, several years in advance. I think Singleton's vision of this was not to put the focus on drugs and try to shed the light on the violence of Black youth rather than, you know, focus on why it's happening. Just put a focus because it is happening. We, you know, there's a lot of Black on Black crime. There's, and it's senseless. Just like, you know, we was talking about, you know, the territories. It's, you have this kind of ingrained into you growing up that you have to be one side or the other. You have to pick a side.
And, but I mean, but it's all connected. So you have generational dependence on government through food, you know, food stamps and what do you call it? Welfare. Welfare. It's called something else now, but but, you know, generational dependence on welfare, which, if you look at like studies and you hear people talk about this, you know, women having babies and throwing the men out because the government will take care of them becomes a generational thing, and then it produces its own sort of toxic culture. So you have generations of boys growing up without fathers and an impression of like, we'll be provided for, government will provide. But that creates its own systemic and symptomatic problems in the community. None of that gets addressed in this movie. But it's all there. It's kind of like implied. It's pointed at a little bit. But the reason why some of these guys are behaving the way they are, and I think where John Singleton kind of gets it, but then walks away from it, is the conversations between Angela Bassett and Lawrence Fishburne, Cuba Gooding Jr.'s mother and father, you know, about like, hey, he's making really bad choices. He's developing not great behaviors. You need to come in and father him. You need to show him what it is to be a man, because there's not a lot of guys like Lawrence Fishburne around in this community. And so John Singleton's like, see, we would have less violence if we had more dads in the homes and not women throwing the men out. But it's like, I'm criticizing, but I can almost see where this probably started out way too big and he had to focus on some very specific things, or this was going to get entirely too unwieldy. But you do need to know these things in order to get the true context of the movie.
Yeah, and I fully agree with that. And I think that's why Boys in the Hood and Menace to Society kind of go hand in hand.
Oh, they are very complimentary of each other.
Yes, because you kind of see the, it's kind of like the polished version and then the gritty version.
Yeah,
and you see the vast similarities, but Menace to Society kind of shines the light into the darkest corners of it.
Yeah. Anything else about Boys in the Hood you want to talk about before we move on?
No, I mean we're good to move on to Menace.
All right. So Menace to Society is a 1993 American teen drama film. Oh, the drama! Directed by the Hughes brothers in their directorial debut. So you might know the Hughes brothers from the following films: The Book of Eli, of which they were directors, From Hell, which we talked about during Alan Moore month, those many years ago, before I was social when we used to have fun. American Pimp. I remember American Pimp. Oh, Pimps and Hoes. Dead Presidents, which followed Menace.
Dead Presidents was a good movie.
Yeah, Dead Presidents was pretty good. All right, so that's that. So I think it's like the, other than maybe Dead Presidents, this might be their most famous film. The film is set in Watts and Crenshaw neighborhoods of Los Angeles and follows the life of Kane Lawson, who is played by Tyrone Turner, and his close friends. It gained notoriety for its scenes of violence, profanity, and drug-related content, and also received critical acclaim for the performance of Glenn Turner, who is the mayor in The Wire, Jada Pinkett, who did not look like Jada Pinkett. It took me a minute to realize who that was, and Lorenz Tate. The direction that's really...
Keep her name out your fucking mouth.
Portrayal of urban violence and powerful underlying messages. Legacy. In 2013, rapper and recorder producer Kanye Kanye West cited Menace Society as one of the most watched favorite films on an episode of Bret Easton Ellis podcast. Okay. Reception. It is an 84% on Rotten Tomatoes. Told with grit and verve by the Hughes brothers in their feature debut, Menace Society is a gangland epic that breathes with authenticity while steeped in style. I'm not gonna lie. I kind of prefer Menace to Society over Boys in the Hood. Because of all the things that I said before. This like is almost like a flow chart. If you look at the characters of Kane Lawson, who's played by Tyrene Turner, and Lorenz Tate's character, Kevin O'Dog Anderson, and you think about why they're doing what they're doing. Why is he shooting the Korean grocer? Because he needed hubcaps just one fine day, just jacks the guy in the middle of the street. You know, why is any of the things in this movie happening? There's a great flow chart. You see him as a small child. There's crack. There's alcohol. There's abuse happening. There's people being murdered in the dining room.
Gun violence. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all right there. It would be natural for him to grow up and become a drug dealer. And then everything he does as being a drug dealer follows from that. When you grow up utterly traumatized and desensitized to violence, you're going to then go and recommit that violence around you, which is like Lorenz Tate's whole character. Why is he doing what he's doing? Because that's what he's been taught to do. This feels natural to him. Plus, he's a fucking sociopath. He has like no remorse about any of what he's doing. And so the whole story follows these two characters as they live their day-to-day drug dealing, violence committing life. But it all revolves around the very first scene of the movie where Lorenz Tate shoots a Korean grocer, like you do. And there's a tape of it floating around. And he keeps showing the tape of them shooting this guy and his wife.
And getting off on it.
Yeah, like it's porn. And eventually, O-Dog and Kane have a split. And kind of like what we're going to talk about next with Juice, like because of that split, they're kind of like warring against each other. And the movie just kind of ends with, I don't remember how.
It ends in a drive-by.
Yeah.
In front of the house.
Okay, so it's Kane and Ronnie, Jada Pinkett, are preparing to leave for Atlanta. Elena's cousin and his friends drive by Ronnie's house and engage in a drive-by shootout. Sharif is killed instantly, who plays the knucklehead-turned-Muslim. Well, he has some of the best lines in this thing.
Yeah.
While Kane is fatally wounded, trying to protect Ronnie's son, Anthony, Stacy and Ronnie come running out of the house screaming for help. O-Dog retaliates as the attacker is unarmed. Stacy tells him to get help as Kane slowly dies. He recalls his grandfather asking him if he cares whether he lives or dies, and he realizes in his dying moments that he does. So, yes, it's a tragedy. I'm going to stop for a second and kind of let you weigh in on Menace to Society. Those are my big points about this, is that I think it more clearly shows why, between the riots, the influx of drugs, the trauma, the violence, why these two characters behave the way that they do, and it ends the way that it does.
This, like I said, this shows a little bit more of the grittiness of that Boys in the Hood kind of didn't shy away from. I feel like this wanted to be shown in Boys in the Hood, but like you said, it would have got way out of hand trying to, you know, trying to do things. Boys in the Hood would have been a three-picture deal.
Here's what I'll tell you. When I compare the two films, one of these is very much like, we want white people to come see this. One of them is like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Like, I really don't care. Because I see Menace Society being way too much for a lot of white people.
Yeah, Menace to Society, it was the type of movie that gives you the realization of what's going on. Boys of the Hood is kind of glamorizing what's going on.
Well, I remember like the last season of The Wire, where my wife watched it with me. She hadn't watched a lot of The Wire, but she'd seen enough of it to know who the characters were. And when she sees Dookie, you know, the ninth grader, shooting heroin in a horse barn, and she's like a grade school teacher. She works with Dookie's, you know, for the length and breadth of
her career. She works with Dookie.
Stop. She works with
Black Bill Dookie.
Stop it. And you know, and it's too My point is, watching a black child shoot heroin in a horse barn, too much for a Title I teacher who, you know, who is coming from a privileged white background and was only just exposed to this sort of thing maybe within a few years of having seen that scene. And that's, and like her reaction, her visceral, sad reaction to it, like it's too much. Like I she couldn't handle it. I feel like that's a lot of people's reaction to Menace to Society. It is way right. too visceral, way too gritty. Not for me. I fucking love it.
Yeah,
but
I'm like
grabbing people by their face and like, look at it. Look at the harsh reality.
Like, kind of like that meme from Bird Box, just sitting there holding their eyes open.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is something like, this is really, really intense because you see the underbelly. You mm-hmm. see the growth that he goes through. He's exposed to this throughout mm-hmm. his entire life, but until he gets old enough to when his dad gets killed, his mom overdoses, he goes and lives with his grandparents, but it's already ingrained and he's already desensitized to this, and he's going to a neighborhood and you know his grandparents are trying to be such positive influence.
Right.
And you see this in the monologue where he's got the two boys and he's talking to them about trying to get their lives together, mm-hmm. you know, telling them that they've got, and he says, when he starts talking that Jesus shit, it goes one through one ear and out the other. Mm-hmm. And you could see that because he doesn't know the good side. He just knows the bad side, the bad shit that produces results, and that's where you get Menace to Society. Like I said, my one criticism
of Menace to Society is you want Morris Chestnut and Cuba Gooding Jr. to get out of the ghetto. You're sad when Morris Chestnut's character is gunned down.
Yeah,
you're you're sitting there. The tension is what's going to happen to Cuba Gooding Jr. Is he going to get out, or is he going to do a bad thing and get himself killed, just like Doughboy eventually will, and. There's nothing like that in Menace to Society. Kane is your star character, and he does kind of have like a come to Jesus moment where he's like, I got to get the fuck out of here. Like, you know, what's his face character from the first season of The Wire? He's talking to McNulty in the questioning room, the interrogation room, and he's just like, you just. Do what your fathers and your grandfathers did before you until it becomes too much and it chokes the life out of you. And that's kind of where Kane gets to, where he's like, I've kind of had enough of all of this. I'm tired of looking over my shoulder. I need to start over again. I need to get the fuck out of here, which is Cuba Gooding Jr.'s character, but you want him to get out. You want him to get out of Los Angeles. I don't know if by watching Menace to Society, is anybody worth cheering for in that movie. Like, this is a bleak movie with not great... I love the movie to death. It's one of my favorite. It's like in my top 20 of all time, but it is a bleak fucking movie with no characters that I want to see succeed. Like you definitely want to see Lorenz Tate's character fucking succeed. Jesus Christ. You're hoping he gets gunned down through most of the movie because he's such an asshole. But like Tyron Turner's character, Kane, he's not as well written as Cuba Gooding Jr. in the sense of somebody the audience member can relate to and sympathize with and want to seek it out of danger.
Right. Like I said, I mean, it's weird because, like I said, these two movies go hand in hand, and it's kind of like they're complementary pieces.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You're seeing two different. It's like you're seeing two different streets in Compton, mm-hmm. in Crenshaw and stuff around there. And the one thing that got me in Menace to Society, I know this is going to sound stupid, is when they get carjacked.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they're wanting, and the cousin is just laying there in the road, and everybody's just wanting to leave him. Just like... You know,
oh my God. And Sharif just like hanging over. It's like, it's not right. It's not right. They're all like, we're going to die. Like, leave them. Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah. And it kind of throws that like really up in your face. Like, mm-hmm. this really happens. This is something that, you know, happens. And if you're in the right wrong place at the wrong time, mm-hmm. you could die. You know, right. if you're trying to save somebody, that exposes you. Yeah. And it's kind of crazy and it's kind of fun mm-hmm. To see that. I mean, yeah, it's kind of fun to watch people die. But no, no, I mean, it's kind
of
fun.
Jason Tesey of the Black Irish podcast.
No, it's kind of fun to see the entertain. It takes basically the entertainment value out mm-hmm. and puts you in that position where you've got to, you know, kind of pull it back and go, damn, you know, that could happen. That's happening multiple times a day, mm-hmm. broad daylight, nighttime. And, you know, and what this is Grand, this is basically Grand Theft Auto before Grand Theft Auto became popular.
Yeah. What I love about the Sharif character, by the way, and again, he's the knucklehead turned Muslim, is like, you know, I talked about this with, what's his, Giancarlo Esposito's character in Do the Right Thing. There's always that one character in like every black movie who just yesterday had, you know, had a come to Jesus moment where he like turned into a Muslim or became a black nationalist or something. And yeah. that character has zero ability to fucking subtly talk about anything. Everyone's got the bullhorn out.
Yeah.
You know, I said about the Giancarlo Esposito, he comes across like somebody who just got back from like, you know, Temple University or some shit.
Yeah.
Like, look at all the black stuff I learned. I have to tell everyone. And, like, nobody yeah. around him cares. That's Sharif's character, and it's fucking great.
And the one line that I like for Sharif is when mm-hmm. it's like where they're at the party, and he walks out there, and he's leaning on the cooler. He's like, why do you got a hood on? He's like, because we're tropical people. And Steph goes, but you're standing on the cooler.
It's right. Like, it's like, well, I'm trying to stop you from drinking this poison.
Yeah, it's like,
get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. And it's just
what,
like,
oh my God, what is the thing he says about ice cream? He was like, ice cream was invented in Africa. And they're like, what the fuck? How are you going to invent ice cream in hot ass Africa?
Yeah. It's he so just good. Says some of the off the wall stuff. But, you know, you have. Basically, you have somebody like that in almost every neighborhood.
Yeah.
That has rediscovered themselves and their heritage. And,
right. always and had a story. Just, always like,
you and can't wants have to a talk.
Yeah.
Wants you can't to talk about it constantly.
You can't have a conversation with them interjecting themselves and like, let me tell you how all the ways I relate to it as you're talking about. And you're like, fuck, get out of here. What's wrong with you? The Lawrence Fishburne character, and this is Charles S. Dutton. He really only has the one scene, though. He's Sharif's dad, and he's talking about yeah. how they're all, like, complaining. They're like, will you please get your Muslim son to shut the fuck up? And he's like, listen, I just want him to, like, function in life and, like, do well. And if and if Islam is what gets him there and not Jesus, I'm all for it. Like, quit picking at my kid. But this one also kind of deals with the chauvinism of 90s black society. You know, like... It's all guys sitting at the thing, and it's just like, yo, Keisha, get him a plate. Make it and yeah. there's Charles Dutton, not even like, I can get my own plate, it's fine. No, he's like, I'm making a big plate, Keisha. Ooh. My. It's so good. It's years from now after this, where they start focusing on the women in that community, and you know, they start to have a voice, that changes. But these very male-centric movies, which by the way. I think the one thing that also stands out now, watching these in 2023, both Boys in the Hood and Men's Society, is how male-centric they are.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not entirely sure you can get away with making them now and be this male-centric with no female voice in it, other than Regina King meekly saying, yo, why we gotta be all bitches? Because that's what you are, bitches and hoes. Ice Cube like feather on walks away.
I think you could get by with making Boys in the Hood now.
Sure.
Definitely not.
Nobody's greenlighting Menace of Society. Not in 2023. No. All right. Anything else about Menace of Society before we move on?
No, let's let the juice loose.
All right. You got the juice now, Jason Teasley.
You got the juice.
All right. And so Juice is a 1992 American crime thriller directed by Ernest R. Dickerson. Has got quite the fucking career here, man. His filmography. I'm trying to see. Okay, as a director, He directed Juice, Surviving the Game, Demon Knight of the soundtrack, which is amazing. Bulletproof, with Damon Wayans and I think Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler.
Ambushed, Blind Faith, Bones, Never Die Alone, and in 2017, Double Play was the last thing. He also apparently has like shit tons of looks like acting. Oh no, these are he's got a lot of television credits.
I was gonna say he's probably got a lot of small screen stuff.
Yeah, he's got a lot of television direct television direction. So he started off in 1990 with great performances, and then he did Future Sport, Strange Justice, Night Visions. He did an episode of The Wire in season two.
Right. Bingo card.
And then two episodes in season three. He's done The L Word, CSI Miami, Heroes, Masters of Horror, ER, season four of The Wire, Weeds, which we reviewed on here, Eureka, holy cow, Burn Notice. I'm skipping a bunch of these. Some Dexter, some Treme, which we'll be talking about Dexter. Soon. Yeah, he did some Dexter, Walking Dead, Bosch, The Man in the High Castle, House of Cards, The Purge, Godfather of Harlem, DMZ, and then most recently, as of last year, as a matter of fact, Raised by Wolves and Bosch Legacy. So this is written by Dickerson and Gerard Brown. It stars Omar Epps, Tupac, Jermaine Hopkins, and Khalil Kane. The film touches on the lives of four black youths growing up in Harlem. So we switch locales now. Following their day-to-day activities, their struggles with police harassment, rival neighborhood gangs, and their families. As far as reception and legacy, it's generally favorable. It's got a B+ from Entertainment Weekly, of which it said, the film is an inflammatory morality play shot through with rage and despair, like Boys in the Hood and Straight Outta Brooklyn. It asks, when every aspect of your environment is defined by violence, is it possible to avoid getting sucked into the maelstrom? Dickerson also received praise for his directorial skills. Coming out from behind Spike Lee's camera, Ernest Dickerson has instantly arrived at the forefront of the new wave of black directors. His film aims for the gut and it hits, has a 79% on Rotten Tomatoes, which I can kind of see. Yeah, and just like see also Boys in the Hood, Menace to Society. And the movie we could have done, but I chose to do this one instead, New Jack City. Because don't you understand, Jason Deasley, these are some New Jack criminals. What we need is some New Jack cops.
Yeah, New Jack City's. We need to put that on the docket for next year too.
Sure.
New Jack City's is one of those influential movies as well in black film. Juice though, not so much.
I like Juice. Like I said, I wanted to talk about Juice because I feel like again, it's like you take Crush Groove or Break In, and you're like, okay, but. What if we throw guns? What if we go Tupac going gun crazy in there? And it's great. Like there was a great show that talked about the early days of DJ culture in the Bronx called the Get Down, I believe it was called. And the Get Down is phenomenal. And it cannot be understated the importance of New York City urban black DJ culture and its influence on the greater urban black society.
The problem I have with Juice, I have two major things. One, the dialogue. The dialogue was laughable in some of the scenes. Okay. In some of the tense scenes. I mean, you know, looking back with, you know, 2023 retrospect.
I'm sorry. Jermaine Hopkins talking about banging some girls. Like, I was doing the hoochie coochie.
Yeah. Dude,
I almost fell off the fucking bed. I was laughing so hard. Yeah. Some of this is a bit strained.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you could have wrote it a little bit more. I guess you could have wrote it a little bit more urban because I don't think I've ever heard of a young black man saying hoochie coochie. Even if he was on the Chattahoochee, but yeah, especially the last line of the movie is what gets me is now you got the juice.
Sorry. It's like, I will never forget that use in Don't Be a Menace. It's like, you got the juice. Shut the fuck up. So good.
Yeah. It's like this was basically two movies, to me. This was the Tupac going gun crazy and young DJ makes it big.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the dichotomy of the movie that the movie is dealing with is. So, you know, it used to be said the way to get black kid out of the culture was to throw him a basketball. And then rap music becomes a thing. And it's like, okay, if you don't have any basketball talent, the only other way to get out of the ghetto was two turntables and a microphone. You know, you had all of these.
Where it's at.
Where it's at. You got
turntables and a microphone. And Jessica White.
In our Black History Month show, could not have made a whiter reference than Beck. Yeah. You're welcome.
We do what we can do.
Anyway, but
Beck Life Matters.
Beck Life Matters. The only other way to get out of the ghetto was through music. And a lot of guys, they might not have had any rapping talent, but they could sure scratch a record. And so what you see in Juice is the push-pull of the crime culture versus the desire to get out of that and try to do something positive. And I think Juice more readily shows that not everybody in the Black community is horrible. Like, kids, I think with the exception of maybe Tupac, I think the three out of four of them came from decent homes with parents, two of them even.
Yeah.
And they, you know, and so there's that, yes, I grew up in urban Harlem with a lot of crime and drugs, but I've got good people around me saying do better, and I want to, and I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to you for a second.
Yeah. The issue with I Have Juice is, yeah, it shows the lighter side, the hope and struggle that, you know, you're trying to get young Black youth to see a better way outside of drugs, alcohol, dealing drugs, violence and stuff, and sports, like Mark was saying. So, yeah, if you don't have the athletic talent, you know, you kind of go toward the musical side, because anyone can teach themselves how to DJ, how to mix records, and lay down some really nice house tracks that, you know, that goes back to, like Mark said at the top of the show, is a culture that me and him grew up with is tape trading. And that's how you got a lot of notoriety in music is, you know, you would get these mixtapes, and you even see it more recent, not so much since the invention of, you know, how big the internet's got, but back in, like, you know, our high school days, early college days, you know, you've seen, you know, the mixtapes of artists coming up. You've seen mixtapes from tradings, mm-hmm, and stuff like that. And this is what, this kind of shines a light on that, because, you know, back in this early 90s is...
Oh, I worked in record stores. The box of consignment mixtapes? Oh my, those are treasures.
Yeah, and, you know, you see the... Because anybody, like I was saying, while you stepped away, Mark, anybody can... You know, teach themselves how to mix, how to scratch, and do the mixtapes and gain underground popularity. Mm-hmm. This is what I was seeing, and you know, you've seen the battles that they had by, you know, a very mm-hmm lovely Queen Latifah, that I must say. Queen Latifah was looking nice back then.
Sure,
but yeah, this shows the. The yin and yang of somebody that's trying to better themselves, get out. And then there's Tupac, 30-year-old Tupac, losing his mind and going gun crazy and turning on his friends.
Yeah, so the whole story with Juice is, first, it's like you talk about, like, the story of two different movies. The first half of this movie is just a day in the life of these ne'er-do-wells. And then, by the way, Sam Jackson is in a billion different movies, and he's in, like, all of these.
Yeah.
I think, like legitimately, he's in Menace to Society and Juice. But he is not in Boys Night, if I remember correctly. I don't think he's in there anywhere. But he might as well have been, Jesus Christ.
I'm pretty sure that he was probably in the background somewhere, uncredited. If he wasn't credited in it, he was definitely uncredited.
Yeah. But so the first half of the movie is just a day in the life of these ne'er-do-wells, and then they decide that on the night of Omar Epps's DJ gig, they're going to rob a grocery store. and I think this in this particular case it's Puerto Rican, and the whole thing, it doesn't even go badly. It's just that Tupac is a lunatic in the movie.
Yeah, like, he just wants to kill somebody. He kills the guy for no reason and tries to justify it.
Because I think in the writing, it's implied in the very first scene you see him in when he's looking, you know, where his father, I guess that's the father character, is looking catatonic. And Tupac is sort of looking at him almost like forlornly, I guess, you know, just looking like he just doesn't know what to do with his father. And I think it's meant to imply that Tupac's got some mental health issues, but he's not acting any differently than Raheem or Steele or Omar Epps' character. And then as the movie progresses, as you see him interacting with like the Puerto Rican gang and some other things, like you get the sense that Tupac's not playing with a full deck, but he doesn't go full Goose Bozo until Raheem gets the gun. And then suddenly his whole character changes. This other being kind of comes out of him, and he just becomes obsessed with killing. And it almost, and I wanted to talk to you about this because you're the horror guy. You and Robert Winter are my horror people. This almost becomes a horror movie. Like, you know, if you think about what he does and the way he's justifying what he does, like he is shooting people. Like take away the gun and give him a butcher knife. How is this any different than fucking Scream? He's just like fucking killing guys indiscriminately, and then he like wants to frame Omar Epps for it. Like in what you would see in a horror movie.
Yeah, and the premise behind the killing, and what really drives this home is the funeral scene where he's talking to Raheem's mom and he says, "I'm gonna find out who done this," and it's like, and you just see them in the background, like just giving him this look, like, "Are you have no remorse?" And you're really a sociopath. And
yeah,
the people he kills outside of the Korean guy are his lifelong friends that he grew up with.
And let's go through it. Like he killed. So here's the thing: they robbed the Puerto Rican grocer. He wasn't giving him lip. It's like the Korean guy, like, gave Lorenz Tate shit. He was like, "I feel sorry for your mom," and like, "You're not gonna talk about Lorenz Tate's mother." So he had to die. We all understand the Korean grocer had to die at the beginning of Menace to Society. You don't talk about a gangster's mother. This guy was like, "Just don't shoot me." Like, he was cooperative. Tupac shot him in cold blood. Tupac shot him because he wanted to kill a guy.
Yeah.
And then and then the next time he kills somebody, it's Raheem, and because they're fighting over the gun. And then he kills Steele, I think, or he tries to, because he thinks Steele is ratting him out.
Yeah.
And then he kills Rodman, the Puerto Rican gangster, after there's a scene early on where those guys try to bully him, essentially, and beat him up. But he gets saved by his pals. This time around, they want him dead, so they just leave him. They just throw him to the wolves. And the cops come and break it up, but then he gives Rodman chase and he shoots him down. Which, considering in the scene prior to that, he had a knife up his nose, kind of justified. But I think that's maybe. But then it comes down to just him and Omar Epps, and like the whole third act of the movie is Tupac trying to kill Omar Epps, but frame Omar Epps for all the murders.
Yeah, because he goes into the hangout where Samuel L. Jackson is, and he tells him that, you know, he's off the rocker. You know, he kind of plants that seed. So when Omar Epps goes into him, he says, "I don't know you." He said, "Yeah, you do know me." He's like, "No, I don't. I know of you, but I don't know you." And that kind of hits home because, you know, and it kind of rings true now is, you know, a lot of with social media and stuff, you could hear something and you take it as the gospel rather than letting someone defend themselves and hearing their side. You take hearsay as gospel now. Right. And, you know, that's a problem we have in today's society that rings true back then. The difference is these were tight-knit communities versus an expansion internet.
Right. My other issue with Juice is take out the DJ stuff. This is not different enough from Boys in the Hood and Menace Society to really stand out. the difference maker is that Omar Epps is conflicted about, does he want to be an armed robber or does he want to be, because I don't think any of them are dealing drugs. They're
no.
They
wasn't even a stick up crew. They did it to get respect because they was getting bullied.
Well, I was like, they're doing something. They started talking about like nickel and diming stuff. So like, I don't recall them selling drugs.
No,
but they're doing something at the arcade. I don't know if they were gambling or what it was, but that's also the thing. It's not really clear how they're making any money or why they're roaming around town until they decide they're going to rob the grocery. And then it's like, they're just upping the ante. But take out Omar Epps' sort of confliction between, do I want to be a DJ? Do I want to be a criminal? And all that's left is a movie that sort of pales in comparison to Mess Society and Boys in the Hood. I don't dislike the movie by any means, and there's a lot of great lines in this. The Steele's character is hilarious, but you're right, the dialogue is not particularly strong. This is definitely held up by performances. Like, Tupac is fucking mesmerizing in this. He's really good.
This is probably one of the, I mean, everybody goes like Poetic Justice or something. But I think this is one of his really stellar performances.
Yeah.
Because I seen this on the IMDb. He immersed himself so much in this movie that he had people calling him Bishop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, really, you're that, you know, that meta, entrenched in this character. But yeah, there's stories that. They kept telling me he was fired from the movie and he'd leave set and they just to fuck with him. And so, yeah, this is one of his, this is probably the best movie that I've seen him in because it's kind of the closest thing to what he really was in real life.
Looking at his, film career, let's see if I can find it here.
Juice, Poetic Justice.
He's been in quite a lot of things. He was in
Above the Rim.
Well, yeah, he used to be in Digital Underground, so he's in Nothing But Trouble. That is a piece of shit.
That is a great movie. I was just talking about that movie.
Oh my god, so bad. All right, he's in Above the Rim. He's in not a lot.
and Above the Rim, he walked around with the razor blade in his mouth.
Yep. He's been portrayed. He's got a lot of archival footage, but yeah, not a lot of other than like Poetic Justice. He's done some TV, but not a lot of movies. Killed before his time. All right. Anything else about Juice before we close up?
Nah, man. I mean, I think we've covered all three movies pretty extensively.
All right. Well, folks, that is our first chapter of our first show of three covering for Black History Month. Next up, I believe, are a set of Pam Grier movies, which we'll be doing 2 weeks from tonight. We'll be looking at Foxy Brown, Sheba Baby, and Black Mama, White Mama, one of my personal favorites.
I've never seen any of these. I have not seen any of these.
Right. And then we're looking at three Eddie Murphy movies. Unfortunately, just because of scheduling, we can't get to them until March 2nd, so just after Black History Month ends, but we're counting it anyway. We've got Harlem Nights, Trading Places, and Life. Life.
The only one I have not seen is Trading Places.
I haven't seen Life. Oh, you've never seen Trading Places?
No.
Holy shit, that movie is phenomenal, by the way.
I've heard it's great, but yeah, I've never seen Life. Life is right up your alley. It is.
Go ahead and finish what you're saying. I'll address
that. Okay. Life is great. And just when you get to Life, just remember the line, are you going to eat your cornbread?
So we had one of our viewers leave a comment tonight. R. Keys, not one of my girlfriends tonight. Hi, Mark. Regarding Boys in the Hood, definitely the best movie of the group you're discussing tonight. Cube is a much better actor than Tupac, in my opinion. You're not wrong there. But I'll tell you, like, he does a really great job in this and then kind of like steps down for Anaconda. Like, that might have been too much a movie for him at the time.
My Anaconda don't want none.
Unless you got buns, hon. Hey, he wants to know if we're doing 48 hours. We are doing 48 hours, just not for Black History Month. Because, I'm social. However, Jason and I, when are we doing 48 hours?
October?
April. April 3rd.
April.
We're doing a Long Road to Ruin for both 48 hours movies, starring Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte. So, yes, we are covering them. But we didn't want to do, I wanted to do both 48 hours movies. So that's why we're doing them as a Long Road to Ruin, as opposed to doing just 48 hours in a triple feature of Eddie Murphy movies. And before anyone asks, we've already done Coming to America. So,
yes.
And
well, did we do Coming to America? Well, I know we did.
Well, we did the new one.
We did the new one, but we did a retrospect on the old one.
Yeah. We talked about it. All right. In the meantime, Jason Caesar's not done with us yet. No, not by a long shot. Tomorrow he will be on Damn You Hollywood to be talking the new M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong Jam, Knock at the Cabin, starring Big Dave Bautista. And then Thursday, me and Alexis Haina will be doing a TV party for Resident Alien Season 2, Part 2. And then myself and Pat Mullen will be talking Pernell Whitaker versus Julio Cesar Chavez, the history of boxing. This weekend, we've got an Everyone Loves a Bad Guy, focusing on promoters, Dana White, Don King, Vince McMahon, and Bob Arum. And then on Sunday, yeah, well, that's from way back in the day.
I don't know when I missed it.
2013, pal.
Yeah. Typically, I listen to a lot of those.
So Saturdays is Everyone Loves a Bad Guy from the Blog Talk Radio era, and Sundays is Metal Hammer of Doom from the Blog Talk area. This particular Sunday is one of the ones where I was on a hiatus. I might have been having a kid at the time. I might have just been off because I needed to be off, or I was on a cruise or some shit. So it's Robert Cooper's solo show where he did an entire death retrospective. And it was like one of the most listened to shows ever. So good for him. Mr. Key says, thanks. Love you guys. Appreciate all the quality entertainment you provide. Well, thank you, sir.
We appreciate you.
All right. That's what's going on here.
Hold on.
Yes.
You haven't touched on the most important movie we're doing this month.
We don't have it scheduled. We don't have it scheduled.
The 27th.
Oh, that one. Okay, I thought you were talking about Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. I'm like, we don't have that scheduled yet. No. Cocaine Bear, yes. The best movie of the year. Bigger than anything Marvel is doing. Bigger than anything DC. Bigger than The Fast and the Furious. Bigger than The Little Mermaid. Cocaine Bear. Yes. Jason will be on our Cocaine Bear show. I will have to see that twice because I'm going with a girlfriend and I'm definitely going to have to take my kids. That's a family affair right there.
Oh, yeah. Who would not take children to Cocaine Bear? I had children in Knock at the Cabin.
Are you bringing really your daughter strange. To go see Cocaine Bear?
If she'll go with me. Amber's already
What is this if shit? You tell her to get the fuck in the car. We're going to see Cocaine Bear.
I'm trying to. She won't watch Megan. So,
oh my god. Well,
she said Megan
is not Cocaine Bear.
Well, she said Megan was too scary for her, so I don't know if she could step up. But she's like counting down the days to Scream 6, and I'm like, make this make sense.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. All right, that's all for me. Thanks. I'm driving. Jason, show me where you piss from.
You could find me. We're kind of a hiatus right now. We're coming back with over on Mosaic MC. We're getting ready to get ramped up for the NFL draft right after the Super Bowl. We're going to start hitting all of the stuff real hard and heavy. Then that's pretty much it. I mean, I don't, outside of the stuff I'm doing with you, Mark, I don't really have much going on besides remembering to watch movies before we do reviews. That's always a plus, which, in my defense, I was awake 5 hours yesterday, legitimately from 10 p.m. Saturday night till 7 a.m.
today.
2 weeks
to watch 3 Pam Grier movies. Make it happen.
Yeah, but if I watch them too early, I'll forget about what happened, and I'll just be like making shit up as I go, and that's never good. We learned that. Here's the insider. We learned that on The Last Anaconda. Because I never watched the final movie because I totally forgot to watch it and I just bullshitted my way through it. But that's just behind the scenes here of the high quality stuff we put out here on the network.
Absolutely. You can nod off during movies. Just have to be awake long enough to know what to talk about.
Yeah. You can fall asleep and pick up, and with me and Mark, we pretty much talk so much nonsense. It just goes with the flow.
All right, folks, thank you for joining us on this Black History Month show. I always enjoy doing these with Jason. This has been Triple Feature. I'm Mark Rattledge. He's Jason Teasley. Be well, be safe, and behave.